It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 128 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening because Joey Esposito is back to talk about a new book that he's got called Pawn Shop that I really, really enjoy, and I think you're going to like it too. Kind of a nice slice of life comic. We also talk about Captain Ultimate and some other things that he's done as well, and also what he's working on. There's a lot to get to in that interview, so let's get to it. I want to welcome back to the podcast Joey Esposito, the creator or co-creator of Captain Ultimate, and has a new book out called Pawn Shop. How are you doing today, Joey?
Good. Thanks so much for having me back.
It's good to talk with you again. Why don't we get right to Pawn? It's Pawn Shop, right?
Pawn Shop, correct.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I get it straight because it's an interesting concept. You know, comics are known for being sort of fantastical.
Right.
And you're going quite the other direction. In a way, I think you're harkening back to the golden era of comics, where we had, like, realistic stories taking place. Mm. And that's kind of what's happening with Pawn Shop. Do you want to explain to people, like, the history and what it's all about?
Sure. So Pawn Shop was conceived as an original graphic novel. It's four chapters. And it's a slice-of-life story. You know, there's no superpowers, there's no genre element to it other than this is people's lives as they live them in New York City. And so the general premise of the story is it's four strangers or four people whose lives are interconnected in ways that some ways they know and some ways they don't through this one central location, which happens to be a pawn shop, fictional pawn shop that we made up in the center of New York City. So it's a slice of life thing, and you know, each chapter follows a different character. Mm-hmm. Each chapter is its own standalone story, but when you read it as a complete book, each chapter affects the next one. So you'll see some events in chapter one that are replayed again in chapter four, but have a different context because of the different perspective that you're getting on it.
Mm-hmm. I had a chance to read it, and I really enjoyed it. I like these kinds of stories. I mean, this could be more different from Captain Ultimate in my mind. Mm-hmm. You know, this is that's a superhero story, and of course you've got your superheroics and things like that. But this one is much more about – I honestly felt like these people were real. Did you pattern these people after anybody that you had met, or was it just kind of you saw somebody and kind of figured what kind of things they might be going through?
I mean, I think that's where a lot of – writing comes from in general. Like, I love people watching, and especially in a place like New York City, you can just sit on a bench and just sort of make up people's lives as they walk by, you know? So I'm sure there's elements of that and also elements of people that I've known or met in my lifetime. There's nothing specifically patterned after anyone that I can point to, but you know, when you're creating characters, it all sort of ends up getting funneled in somehow one way or another. Mm-hmm. So there's no one specific here, but I just thought they were all really, Harold's the old man. Mm-hmm. In our first chapter, and he's where it all started from. And you can kind of see that, I think, because mm-hmm. His story is sort of the crux of the other stories as well, whether mm-hmm. those characters realize it or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty interesting. I liked it real well. I have to tell you, though, I think this is a long-standing tradition among storytellers. Mm-hmm. I was talking with Sy de Tom, who was a British writer, and he was writing on one of their metros over there, and he saw this old guy, and he was kept like playing with his hands, kind of, you know, like making them together, and he got this whole story about it. He was a serial killer, and all these other things happened, and he looked at his hands as kind of dirty because he's been killed so many people and all.
Right.
And I was like, wow. I said, you know, I sit on the metro and I don't see anything like that.
In reality, that guy is probably the nicest dude ever.
That's what I imagine, yeah. That's the funny part. But I just got a kick because he saw this person. And because he was there kind of moving, you know, doing things with his hands, that got this whole story started in his head. Mm-hmm. And I kind of figured that's kind of some of the stuff you got when you got together with all these stories, because they're all really interesting. What I like about them is that they are somewhat interconnected, and you don't know how until you read them all exactly how they work together.
Right.
I thought that was really cool.
Thank you. And yeah, I mean, speaking for the people that I've people watched myself, I used to work at a Starbucks, and so like in that first chapter, you see Harold go into a coffee shop and is friendly with the barista and stuff. And that's taken directly from my experience of like this one regular customer that would be in there every day, you know, and that's sort of what he did. He came in the morning and hung out all day and he left, and he was a really nice guy. Mm-hmm. So that's where that sort of element comes from. But I just thought it was interesting. Like, why, what if he's doing that because, you know, his wife passed away and this is how he gets his social interaction now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's really good because, you know, he reminded me so much of my dad who passed about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He acted a lot like my father did, you know, that social thing is really important to him, and to go out and do those kinds of things. He's after something, and I don't want to spoil what, but he's trying to recapture part of his life that has left him, you know, and left him and is in the past,
mm-hmm.
and he's actually trying to find something that will revive some of that in his heart. And I thought that was such a touching story. I really liked that.
Thank you.
I mean, there wasn't not a punch or a kick thrown anywhere in it, and it was, and yet it had me really, you know, I got choked up watching it, you know, reading it like that, because it was so well done.
Well, thank you. Success.
Yeah. Well, that's what I don't think people, you know, I hate to say this, New York City, and of course, I've visited New York, I've never lived there, mm-hmm. and so for me, I see it as kind of a tourist thing, and you always have to wonder, you know, because people walk and they don't talk to each other, and they can always tell that I'm a tourist because I look up to see the buildings up
yeah.
above, and they all go, oh, tourist.
Dead, you know, giveaway.
Yeah. So I really got a kick out of this, because I've had a chance to kind of stay with friends who have little communities in which they interact, and I really got a sense of this, that this Harold, you know, very well could be walking. There could be several Harolds out there going around trying to relive or recapture part of their history.
Right. And what I try to do with that, you know, I like that there's a physical representation of this old life that he's looking for,
mm-hmm.
because it's placed to what he's actually looking for is just, he wants to relive, you know, the younger days. He has regrets about everything that happened with his wife. And so to give him a physical manifestation of that, I thought was important. But also, mm-hmm. I think it's important for him to get that and realize that it's okay. Like, this is how life goes. Like, this is the next step, you know, what he has to do, and be able to let that go. So Harold's story is my favorite in this book.
Oh, really?
I like the other characters as well, but mm-hmm. his was the first one that this all stemmed from to begin with. And it just means, I don't know, there's something about that love and loss sort of thing that I'm really attracted to.
Well, I found myself going, ah, all the time. You know, he's talking to the girl, and she says to him that one of the great lines is, he starts telling the same story, and he realizes all of a sudden that he has told these stories in the past.
Right.
And her response is, well, it gets better every time you tell it. And I went, aw. Aw, that's such a, because, you know, don't we get, some of us get really tired when people, you know, that are older want to keep telling the same stories over and over.
Right.
But she understood, and she really got that.
Yeah.
You know, God, that just touched me. I really thought that was a cool thing.
Well, thank you.
Now, let's talk a little bit about there's a little difference here going on, is the fact that this is coming out through Comixology, right?
Well, Pawn Shop has a really long history in terms of production. So I started working on it in late 2011 in terms of like plotting it and planning it out. Early 2012, we got the original pitch together, which was the first, you know, five or six pages of chapter one. And then so I was continuing to write, and then we launched a Kickstarter, excuse me, in the summer of 2012. So by the end of the summer 2012, we had raised the funds. The plan was to release the hard copy of the book, I think it was February 2013, and it just came out last month. So there's a whole long, you know, dramatic story about the delays and all the trouble that we had, you know, getting this book together and stuff. But we finally made it happen. And so all the Kickstarter stuff is shipped out, and now we're launching the digital campaign on Comixology, which has happened this week. Well, I guess by the time this airs, it'll be in the middle of it all, but
yeah,
in April, we're serializing it, so we're releasing each chapter as an issue. Each one's going to be 99 cents.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm really curious because I got to talk with Chip Mosier from Comixology several weeks back, and he talked about the program that you actually participated in. And of course, he didn't mention any specifics of like who was doing it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really fascinated. Maybe you can add a little perspective to that. How did this work with Comixology? How did this come to be? Did you have to like propose the thing to them? You know, what happened along those lines?
Well, the Comixology Submit in general is a platform that anyone can use. They have specific requirements in terms of what you need to give them. Like the PDFs have to be this resolution and this size, and you know you need this size image and these covers and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you submit that, you upload it to them, and what they'll do is they'll go through it and make sure it meets their standards. So you know if it doesn't look professional, it's not going to get on. But there's so many comic creators that self-publish and do their own stuff, so it's really a great platform to get your books on the Comixology without having a big publisher attached. So as long as it's a professional grade, it should get through the approval process. And they do the whole the guided view thing. So they'll transfer that for you and everything. And then basically once, you know, the process can take a while. And then once it's done, they put it on their site for sale and they help promote it and stuff. And they take, you know, a cut of the profits, but then you get the rest.
Now, what I'm curious about is, how did you hear the program?
They made a big announcement about it. I think it was in 2012 when they actually announced it. I don't recall specifically, but I was working in press at the time, so it was like something that I covered. And just as someone that is very interested in publishing my own work and all that kind of stuff, I'm sort of keep track of these sorts of things. Because not too long before that, there was that company called Graphically, which is another digital comics provider, and they've since left the comics game and just do like ebooks and stuff now.
Oh.
But they had done something similar before Comixology, but it wasn't as user friendly and they weren't as prominent in the market. So when Comixology announced it, it was really a big deal. And I have lots of friends that have taken advantage of it, found lots of great books on there. So I'm super excited.
Oh, good. Good. Well, I hope it's a big success because I like variety, and so often it's hard to get, you know. I mean, when you think comic, the first thing I think of is bam, pow, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's nice to read real humans, you know, a bunch of stories. And I really like that about that. And by the time this airs, the second chapter will be out, and that has to do with a nurse by the name of Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I do like is that you do bridge from one story to another, and sometimes you'll have whole sequences to pull over from a previous story. You see how that interacts with them as opposed to the original person.
Right.
So I like that a lot. I mean, did you have any idea that you wanted to do this, or did this kind of present itself when you were writing it? Had you read it somewhere before? I was just curious as to how you got to this part that made this happen in the stories.
Well, the original concept of where it came from in the pawn shop and all that stuff is because on my old commute to work in Los Angeles, I used to pass a pawn shop in Van Nuys that was very stuck out. Like this actually, it's actually basically the one that's drawn in the book, just sort of transplanted into New York. But the signage and stuff outside the shop is taken straight from this store that I saw in LA. And so I would always drive by it, and I always just think about, you know, just pawn shops in general. And then that sort of led me to, I wonder, you know, there's got to be items that people pawn that are taken by somebody else, and like just this, the idea of following one item that was pawned through like the lives of different people, you know, as it's purchased from a pawn shop and pawned at a different place and that kind of stuff. So that sort of led to the idea of having this interconnected story. Figuring out the logistics of that was a less magical thing. It was very, very painful to like make sure that the timeline lined up correctly, because the story takes place like really in it's a span of like 3 or 4 days, but making sure that people, like if this event happens in chapter one, then this person has to be in this specific spot at this point in chapter four, and like making sure that lines up. And even if it's stuff that people wouldn't necessarily notice, it was stuff that I would notice and drive me crazy every time I like look back on it. So I, you know, there was right up to the last minute, like before I went to press, the letterer and designer, and I credit him as editor, Adam Pruitt, mm-hmm. who also does Captain Ultimate for us. But he, I was just like driving him crazy because I was like, well, this isn't right. And can you add like this caption here just to signify that this is like the next day? And you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was a process, but it was definitely something that I wanted to do because I thought it was thematically accurate with the idea of a pawn shop.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, it's very realistic in that sense. Because, yeah, people, all different kinds of people go in and out of pawn shops, and you never know where these things are going to end up.
Right.
And to be able to have all this stuff interact, I thought, you know, you could have just done without all that. You know, you could have just done the different stories, mm-hmm. you know, individually. But to have them all interconnected like that, I thought really made it a lot stronger.
Thank you.
Of a read. So I like that a lot. What's interesting to me is the one person we don't know much about is the actual guy in the pawn shop.
It's true.
He's one of the least characters in there. He does interact with them, but he's much more worried about the buying and the selling than he is about the people. So
I mean, he's got a business to run, so
yeah,
it's like he would love to be involved in their lives, but look, he's got to make a living.
Yeah, that's true.
I will say though, since this has come out, like this is intended to be this standalone graphic novel, but since the reception has been so positive and stuff, Sean and I have started talking about doing a volume two, which if we did do that, like it's very, very early, just figuring out the kind of stories and which characters we want to do. But the Frank, the pawn shop owner, would probably be one of the chapters in volume two. So.
Oh, that'd be interesting. That would be really good because I hadn't told you this before we started to record, but I actually wrote a review up and it's going to probably show up on Major Spoilers.
Oh,
awesome. It'll be in the past for folks who are listening to it. Mm-hmm. But I really liked it and I gave it really high grades because I just thought it was so different from what I'm used to reading in comics and really enjoyed it. And, you know, I got the chance to see all four chapters. And by the time people have gotten to this, they'll probably get the first two, and there's two more to go. Do you want to kind of preface the last two and talk about, you know, because the third one actually is kind of the darkest of the bunch.
The third one's pretty dark, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the other ones are pretty, you know, the first one is an older gentleman who's kind of having nice interactions. And then you've got the it's a little darker with the male nurse because there's somebody's life is possibly going to change dramatically. You get to the third one and wow, that was a very different story. So if you read the first two by now, let me tell you, you don't want to miss the third and the fourth. So the third one, do you want to talk a little bit about the third and the fourth and kind of what brought that to you?
I mean, the you can also buy the trade right now, even if the digital chapters are now at my online store, which is joeyesposito.storeenvy.com. So, like, you can get the whole story before it's out on Comixology, if you prefer. So I don't mind talking about, like, stuff that's not necessarily released yet. But, yeah, so chapter two is about a character called Arthur who is a nurse. He's like a hospice kind of nurse. He comes to your home and takes care of, you know, whoever you need taken care of. And he's been working for another character called Samantha, who works on the LIRR, the Long Island Railroad. She's a, you know, she takes tickets and stuff like that, and she's working hard to like keep her. And he's taking care of her brother, which you learn in chapter four because chapter four is about the Samantha character. So those two chapters two and four are sort of the most interrelated because Arthur and Samantha know each other on a day to day basis. Mm-hmm. But chapter three that you were talking about is she's a young 17, 18-year-old punk girl named Jen. Mm-hmm. And this is the darkest chapter. She's, you know, you get the impression that she's a recovering addict and she's just clearly in with the wrong crowd. Mm-hmm. And her chapter is interesting because in any reviews that we've read, she's usually the one that's like the divisive chapter because I purposely, mm-hmm. if you notice, I purposely left out the sort of narrative captions from her. All the other characters have things where they're talking to you in the first person and stuff, and her chapter doesn't have any of that because I felt like she wasn't the type of character that would open up like that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I didn't want her to be like telling you all of her problems and stuff because clearly part of her issue is that she doesn't talk about her problems, you know? So that's been sort of a divisive thing. In general, you know, the reviews have been extremely positive, like overwhelmingly positive. I'm so happy. But if there is a nitpick, that seems to be the thing that people point out.
I don't understand what the nitpicking is about. I don't get that.
I don't know.
What is it about that chapter that they don't like?
Just, I guess that she's just not as, you don't connect with the character as much, which is what I kind of like about it, and that was my intention, I guess. Not that my intention really matters in the end, but I like the idea of she's so disconnected, yet she's connected to all these characters in the book. You know what I mean? As much as she is striving to be her own person, striving to, like, be on her own and be totally separate from the world, like, you can't be that way, no matter how much you try, and that's kind of what I was going for with her chapter.
See, I liked it because it was different from the first two. You know, the first two are a little, a little brighter and lighter than hers. But because, you know, I got to be honest with you, you know, I haven't lived in New York, but have you ever lived in New York?
I have, yep.
Yeah, okay, because that's, I hate to say this, but, you know, that's kind of thing that happens in New York and other big cities. And so when I saw it there, I thought, well, gee, this is actually, you know, very accurate from what I understand goes on. Yeah. You know, I live outside of Washington, D.C., and it goes out in Washington, D.C., believe me.
I mean, I think that's true for most places. Like, there's all types of people in any major metropolitan area, right? Like, you're going to have different kinds of people that, you know, especially the reason I like New York is because it's so easily, you can give easy examples. Like, everyone's on the subway. In any given subway car, there's so many different walks of life, like, at any given time, you know? And so it's so easy for people to have these interconnected lives and not even know it.
Well, I don't know. That, to me, was one of my favorites because, you know, it was realistic in kind of a dark way, which, you know, a lot of comics like to avoid that kind of stuff, which I thought it was actually kind of brave to go down that road and to show us that kind of stuff as well as the other things. So, you know, I'm kind of flummoxed by the fact that some folks didn't like that. I don't understand.
I mean, you know, it's each their own or whatever, and it's fine. Yeah. I get it. I do get it. But I thought it was important to show that side of things too. And because I would say overall, the book is pretty optimistic. I mean, I think it's sad in a lot of ways, but I think it's ultimately optimistic, and I do think that we leave her in a good place. Like, she has a rough journey, but I think the events of the book, her chapter, and the ones that surround her all, you know, work out for the better.
I liked it that Arthur saw her on the subway.
Exactly, and I like that moment a lot, because that's one of my favorite moments, because they're both helping each other in ways that they have no idea about.
Well, the fourth chapter, it ends on a really good note, I think, that several of the things kind of interlink in that last chapter, and it ends up really positively, I thought. And you know what? You know, I got a kick because you talk about relationships and how Jen, the punk girl, doesn't have any way to do that. But towards the end, and I'm not going to spoil it, but in that last chapter, some connections start to happen, and I really thought that was kind of neat. Let's just say somebody finds something that's been left behind, and when those two people interact and they actually start to develop the connection, I was really touched by that. I thought that was kind of a nice way to go, that even in spite of the darkness and the sadness and stuff, that there still is human connection going on. And that
was
a great message. I just thought that was such a great message. I really did. So that was a good chapter. Now, I got to ask, because one of the things I liked about it, because I thought the art really was appropriate for the stories. You know, a little sketchy, a little rough, a little not necessarily, you know, it's not real, you know, Steve Pugh kind of art or something like that. It's much more shady and a lot darker in the feel. And I honestly kind of felt myself transported to New York, because the times I've been there in New York, it felt like that to me.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was a perfect choice for the artwork. Have you gotten many comments about the artwork?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, Sean Von Gorman did the art. He did the colors in chapter one, and then Jonathan Moore, who I worked with on my book Footprints, he actually did the colors for chapters 2 to 4. So Sean's colors are watercolor, and then Jonathan did it digitally to sort of match, you know, the look of it. But Sean in general, I think, I mean, he's born and raised in New York, so that was super important to me. Like, he gets the feel of the city. He understands it. He loves it. It's sort of in his blood, you know. So that was important to me, to have someone that could relay that onto the page. And I'd seen some of his other work that he'd done that had, like, cityscapes and things like that. And so I just thought he was perfect. And in terms of the character work, it's just – it has that – it's surreal in a way, but it's not it's not unrealistic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I like.
I feel like that's what New York is. You know, like it's very surreal, but it's also has its, you know, the gritty like realism to it.
Well, I like the way he has kind of a painted feel to it. So yeah. It's not exactly like a portrait or something, but it's got a little bit of that sort of unrealistic feel to it, which honestly New York has for me. When I go to New York, it's very unrealistic to me.
Right, exactly.
So I'm not used to all that, you know. But I thought that really matched the stories you were telling so well, and I thought it was a great choice.
Yeah, I mean, he really did bring a lot to the book, and even just little stuff like the way that the interior of the LIRR trains look. You know, or the way the subway platforms look, or the railroad platforms on Long Island, or the you know, Sunken Meadow Expressway signs, stuff like just like all that stuff. It's little touches that people that have never lived in New York or have never been there probably wouldn't notice. But it was important to me that if like you were a diehard New Yorker, then you'd be like, okay, they got that right. You know, so.
It was great. I just think this was well worth the wait because it's such a good story. And I'm really glad to hear you say something I actually mentioned in my review. I said, you know, there's millions of stories in New York City, and, you know, we could probably get a pawn shop, too, out of all those stories someplace. So I was kind of – when you said that, I was kind of happy that you're thinking about another set of stories. So I think that's great. I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the development of this book was really taxing like emotionally and physically for a multitude of reasons. But I think that ultimately helped the book in a lot of ways. I mean, I feel like it's the most genuine sort of personal thing that I've written yet. And which I'm proud of. So it's like hard to like go back to that place, you know? But at the same time, I do think that this really is like a spider web of stories that you can tell. Like if you're going to take even these same like few day periods, like there's characters in this book. Like I would love to tell stories about Callie, the barista, and the pawn shop owner, and the bum that's outside the store. You know, all those characters can all have stories with them because they have their own stories that are going on simultaneously.
It reminds me a little bit of the Fox show that was called Touch, and where you didn't know these things were connected until you pretty much got to the end of the hour. And then you found these things. And that's what this reminds me. And I always like that kind of stuff.
Right.
I like that there are connections that we just don't understand at the beginning. And then when we dig a little deeper, we find those things. So I thought it was great.
Thank you.
I like that a lot. Now, as far as getting – you mentioned again your website with the store where people can get the collected volume.
The store is joeyesposito.storeenvy.com.
Okay. Now, if you go to – do you know where the address is of Comixology? Should I just go Comixology and do the search for Pawn Shop?
Yeah, just search Comixology for Pawn Shop. Unfortunately, there's no, like, super easy link
no.
I can give out.
Yeah, okay. Well, why don't we talk about a couple of your other projects just because I mean, you mentioned one of my very favorites, and that is Footprints.
Oh, thanks.
I love that so much. I mentioned to you last time. I'm just curious, is there any more of that coming down the pike, or is that kind of is it done for now?
I did write a one-shot. So I wrote a one-shot that's it's called Bad Luck Charm, and there's two stories in it. One story is pre the events of Volume 1, and one story is after the events of Volume 1. And we do have plans on making it. Jonathan is just doing a lot of illustration work right now, so it's sort of like whenever he can get to it and it makes sense, then we'll absolutely do it. But I definitely, there's so many more things I want to do with those characters. Like this is my first, you know, real book, and that's I just love all of them. And so like I also am gonna do some short stories, like prose stories with Bigfoot, maybe in the time period that we don't see in the books. Like when he's by himself in New York City, like in the 40 years that he's sort of disbanded from his team. So definitely want to do more stuff with them.
Cool. Because I love the whole notion of Bigfoot and you know, you've got other classic characters that are sort of monstrous in there, and they interact as a group to try to make certain things happen, which I liked. I thought that was a great – I never in my life ever thought of putting all that stuff together. So I was really – I was enchanted when I sat down and read it for the first time. Just great.
Thank you. There's a real special place in my heart for Footprints, and just it's just so much fun, you know, and it just combines everything that I've ever loved, like noir and crime and monsters. So I would definitely like to go back to it. It's just a matter of like figuring out schedules and stuff, really.
Well, it's great. I just can't wait to see more of that. So that's why I have to ask. Now, we'll wrap up the way we started. Why don't we talk a little bit about how Captain Ultimate is doing? Because sure. At the time I looked at the preview for the next one. Is that going to be a holiday story?
Yes. Okay. Because we're sort of behind, obviously.
Oh, okay.
At this point. So the way we wrote it was issue number 6 was originally going to hit at Christmas time, okay. Which isn't going to happen. But we just changed it like, hey, this is what happened last Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's still – it is a Christmas story. It's Cap and Milo save Christmas, basically. But it's also the conclusion to what we consider Volume 1 or Season 1 or whatever of Captain Ultimate. So it sort of wraps back around to the beginning – you know, the hint that we saw in issue 1 about Kid Ultimate and all that stuff, that all comes into play in issue number 6 and leads into our next volume.
Because Captain Ultimate is one of those books, and they're rare these days, where you can have adults and kids reading the same thing and enjoying it just as much.
Yeah.
Because it's just such good thing. And I think we need more of those, to be honest. I don't want to see people, you know, where kids are not touching comics because video games draw them much more than comics do because they're, you know, fast-moving and stuff. But I just think that kids should be reading comics like this.
I agree.
So that they understand, you know, what all this stuff means.
Yeah.
And you know, you've made the characters, you and Ben have made the characters, I think, really believable and really people we can identify with. I just think I loved in the last one, you've got this group of heroes that are like the people who inhabit comics today, and they're in a school classroom.
It's my favorite issue we've ever done, by the way.
Which made me laugh out loud because certain things start to happen. They don't take a liking to it, and of course their response is to punch. Mm-hmm. You know, and so when I started to see what was going on, I started to smile. I thought, you know, you guys are making a commentary about how current comics often go. So I got a huge kick out of that. I thought that was wonderful.
Thank you. That's our favorite issue. The Sentient Ninja Alphabet is like our crowning achievement so far, I gotta say. So and that's in no small part thanks to Ben's son, who's actually named Milo. And one day he was just sort of, you know, he'll like throw ideas at Ben, like just apropos of nothing. Because he's like 5 or 6 or whatever, and that's just how kids work. So he's like, I think Captain Ultimate should fight a evil alphabet. And Ben was just like, I don't know what that means, but okay. So he texted it to me, sort of mulled it over, and then a few days later I texted him back. I was like, dude, I have an idea for an evil alphabet, so let's do that. And we did it, and I think it's our best issue.
That's just great. Well, I like them all. I think all the issues have been great fun so far. I'm always excited. Do you, as far as the next issue goes, do you have an idea about when that's gonna hit the monkeybraincomics.com?
I'm not sure when it's gonna hit, but boy's turning in the artwork and it looks great. Then after that, like since issue 6 is sort of wraps our volume 1, we're gonna take a little bit of a break while we get the like trade plans together. And what we're going to do is we're going to make sure we have issues like in the can before we start releasing again, so we can be on a regular schedule. Because I feel I abhor, you know, late comics, and when I put one out, I feel really bad about it. So we're going to just make sure that we get them back on track and then release them at a regular interval.
Well, Captain Ultimate's worth the wait.
Thank
in
you.
My opinion. So I just
that means
you know, I do get a kick out of it. I just, you know, that he's big. You know, he looks, you know, these muscle builders and stuff. But I can't understand how their body actually moves.
Right.
The muscles are so huge, you know, and stuff like that. And then, of course, he's got a big mustache, which I just think is funny. That's because you don't see that in comics very often, you know.
Yeah.
And facial hair is indicated, means it's a bad guy. And so to have him actually have a mustache, I kind of thought that was kind of fun. And I like the costume, and I like Milo the Kid. And Ultimate too, that he also appears in the schoolroom as well, which was that was a great issue.
Thank you. And I will say that issue number 6 has a character that we introduce that immediately after we finished the script for issue 6, Ben and I were like, we're writing a spinoff with this character because he's too he's too amazing. So we're really really excited about that.
See, that's when creativity really spawns, when you do something, and that leads to other things.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's the great thing. Now, you said there's a trade coming, which was going to be one of my questions. Can you say who's going to be producing it at this point, or it's still in the works?
We're still figuring it out. Like, we definitely want to make it happen. We're just trying to find someone that's willing to, you know, take on a kid's comic that's not based on a licensed property, which is admittedly very difficult. And that's fine. You know, I think it's an uphill battle that's worth fighting. And so even if we end up doing it ourselves somehow, that's fine by me. But I definitely want to get it in print because I think it would look gorgeous in print.
Oh,
and I'd like to be able to sell it at conventions.
So. Not only that, if I can make a suggestion, I would say send it to libraries, like public school libraries and stuff. Because I think that, you know, in this era, to get kids reading and enjoying comics is something that we all can be doing. And I really like that. I always keep several in mind whenever I'm at a store and people start saying, well, what can I get my kid to read? And there's a book about a teenage girl called Turning Tiger that was a really good one, and other ones. And so I keep Captain Ultimate in there with it. And I said, when the moment that hits print, I'm going to be starting to tell people about that one as well.
Well, thanks, Ken. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that's super important. And we were just talking on Twitter the other day about getting into libraries and schools and stuff, because I really think it would be it would do well. You know, I think the kids would love it, and librarians would love it. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of making it happen in a reasonable, effective, cost-effective way.
yeah. Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's usually like run over or something when you do a printing job. Mm-hmm. There's usually some that aren't exactly 100% perfect. And then if it was me, I'd take those and give those to the library rather than just throw them out or something like that, because I think that would be great.
I mean, I'm just a thought. Super, super passionate about all ages and kids' comics. I just think it's really, really important, and I think it's something the industry does not focus enough on.
Yeah.
And I get that the sales maybe aren't there, but it's also sort of like the self-fulfilling prophecy where if you don't offer those things, then of course the sales aren't going to be there. You know, if you don't acclimate the market to these things, then they're just not going to happen.
Right. Because I worry when I go into a bookstore and there's not a single person under the age of 18 there.
Right.
I get a little concerned because I'm thinking, man, where's the future? I mean, the future is off playing video games.
Yeah.
And so to me, I think things like Captain Ultimate and other good things, this is how we need to get people reading, you know, getting kids reading.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because like Harry Potter, I mean, this thing just blew out of nowhere. I always get a kick about that, because the first time I ever saw about Harry Potter was on a Friday night news show, and they showed this store, and it was full of kids. And they're waiting for the book to be released at midnight so they can buy it.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, man, how could we get comics to those same people?
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the real trick.
Harry Potter, you know, it took off, and now, of course, she's going to make more of that, which I find interesting. But the thing that I just think that needs to be done is that we need to be focused more on the next generation of comics readers instead of, you know, always being – because, you know, I'm an old guy now as in comics history, the kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But I would really think that we need to have those kids – doing that. I have often thought to give kids like holiday presents that are good comics for them to be reading.
Yeah.
And things like that.
And this is the thing is, like, I feel like there's this mentality sometimes that it's all or nothing. Like, it's kids comics or it's adult comics, where, like, it can be both. Like, it's, you know, people, like, kids aren't stupid and adults like to have fun. You can do something in the middle that's for everybody. Like, I think Captain Ultimate is a little bit more geared towards kids, but there's jokes and stuff in there that the adults can enjoy. But, I mean, there's certainly books, even some of the mainstream superhero books. Like, I would say Daredevil is pretty all ages, and Fraction's Fantastic Four was there for a while. But I feel like there's just this – we sort of went too far in the other direction. Like, we were so concerned with getting comics that comics aren't just for kids or whatever. And then, like, we sort of overshot that a little bit, and now we're, like, in this zone where it's, like, kids can't even go to a comic book store without, like, their moms covering their eyes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the bookstores I go to have the kids' stuff up near the front door.
Yeah.
So as soon as you walk in the front door, you see the kids' stuff, which is good. But it makes me think about the Guardians of the Galaxy movie when you say that, because we went to see – my brother and I went to see Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and we were there, and they showed a Guardians of the Galaxy trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you've got Rocket Raccoon in there. And I always worry about these kinds of things appealing to – because sci-fi people want it deadly serious. There's no comedy involved.
Yeah.
It's very serious stuff. And there was a family behind us, and the mother, they've got a raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
who's going to want to go see a movie with a raccoon in it? And I thought, well, they're not going because, you know, I think that's the one I worry most about for Marvel. I think that one's going to take some doing. You know, I still think that Captain Ultimate would make a great cartoon.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I'm still on board.
Anybody out there listening, you know, this is a great place to go.
Yep.
You know, Saturday morning cartoons are aiming in this direction these days. So I, you know, Captain Ultimate's just waiting to be picked and used and made for kids that could really enjoy them. So
I agree.
That's good stuff.
Those toys would fly off the shelves, I'll tell you what.
I agree. I think that'd be great. Now, any other projects that we need to know about that you're working on?
Nothing that I can really I want to talk about quite yet. Okay. Ben and I do have a cool story for a publisher that's coming out. I think it's coming out in the summer. So that's exciting. Ooh. Something that Captain Ultimate led us to, which is cool. Other than that, I'm just sort of working on some creator-owned stuff. And and potentially Punch-Out Volume 2 at some point.
Oh, that'd be lovely. Now, the one thing, too, I hope that that trade comes out before the holidays because, like I said, that would make a great holiday present for kids.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the plan. As soon as issue 6 is done, we're going to, like, go full force into figuring out what the plan is. Because it's absolutely something that I want to do. I just think it would look so – just the colors and everything would just look so great on the printed page, so –
That'd be good. I don't know if Scholastic would want to pick it up. They do this. I can't remember the name of the book. It's about a girl who's the main character, and she's got magical powers, and they go off into the universe in which she comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's printed by Scholastic, and it's very nicely done. I really love the coloring, and it's a smaller size book than the regular comics, but it's drawn and put together for that way. I wish I could remember it off the top of my head. People are probably out there screaming, "It's this, you crazy person!
You idiot!"
Man, you can't remember it. But I just, you know, wish you a lot more success going forward. And
thank
I just
you.
Think that Captain Ultimate is such a great book.
Thanks a lot.
I really enjoyed that. And I enjoyed Pawn Shop, and I want to see more of that going forward. And I know I'm happy to promote quality, and that's why I'm happy to promote your stuff. So good stuff all around.
Well, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate your support.
It's up to you, New York.
Examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another great interview. But until then, keep reading your comics.